Does he say something?
Something.
You would. Hey guys, it's Stephanie Michelle, and welcome back to the newest episode of Finding the Funny. This episode, I am joined by the very talented, very funny Ace Gillian. Super fun conversation. I learned so much from all of his years in comedy. So without further ado, here's me and Ace talking jokes. Hey guys, it's Stephanie Michelle. I'm here with Ace Gilliam. How are you doing?
Great.
How are you? I'm good. I'm tired, but good. How's quarantine been for you?
Isolated.
I would say isolated also, but my nephew just ran by my door, so I'm never alone.
No, that's between my girlfriend and my two cats, it's been tolerable because there's company. Like, it's weird though, even though my cats treat me like I'm keeping them quarantined, because like my boy cat attacked me the other day. Aww. And was just, yeah, he got scared. And he scratched me up all crazy, covered in cat tiger face. Claw marks.
There you go. I don't know if I pictured you being a cat person or not. That might have been unexpected.
Might have been a what?
I said that kind of, that's a little more unexpected than I thought I think I was going. I don't know, I pictured you as a dog
person. Oh, yeah. No, I'm a total cat person. I've always been a cat person. I like dogs, but I like dogs, but at the same time, I like animals that you kind of have to respect. Dogs, I mean, obviously you have to respect dogs, but dogs are just kind of like, you know what I mean? Like, you could win over a dog with a piece of meat.
That's true.
You know what I mean? And like, yeah, the dog doesn't need, yeah, but a cat will just be like, screw you, I don't care. Like, thanks for the food. And then it's like, I used to do a joke about that where I said it's like living with a stuck up chick at a nightclub. Like, she flirts with you for food and drinks, and then when you give her what she wants, she just the shit out of you the rest of the day. Can I cuss? I don't.
You can cuss. That okay. Is fine. If you start talking about like anal a bunch, I'll have to hit the explicit button. But until then, we're good.
Yeah, well. There's only so much anal I can talk about.
That's good. I had somebody that I was like, that you might have hit the limit. You hit the limit.
Who knew there was a limit on anal?
I found out when I was in the middle of a conversation. I feel like I need to make sure, because I was going to say in the middle of it, and I was like, no, middle of a conversation about it. That's when the limit came up.
You're all, well, you know. One thing led to another, and now that we're in the middle of it, I think we shouldn't talk about this.
You're like, now that we're there,
it's okay to do it.
You're like, yeah, there's some things you just don't talk about it. That was it. No, I have a cat too. My daughter hates him, or her. My daughter hates because she's not nice, and she wants dogs. So I completely get that. It makes sense. But the reason we're really here is not to talk about cats. I mean, we probably could, but let's talk about the other stuff. So how long have you been doing comedy?
20 years? Maybe, no, I'm going on 21, I think, come to think of it.
I like how you asked, you said it like a question.
I check my watch. What?
You said it like a question, like, what? Is it 20 years?
Yeah, it's one of those things where you just kind of go like, man, you know, like when you're in prison and you're just chalking those lines.
Yeah.
And then one day you just quit and then you go, I don't know. It was about 10 years ago I stopped counting. So,
got it. What made you go into comedy?
It was an accident, actually.
Okay.
I when I was in college, I had a roommate who was a comic, and we used to go to this bar literally 50 yards away from our apartment. Okay. And so anyways, I used to go watch him do comedy every single Friday night, and I started writing jokes for him. Like, hey, try this, hey, try that. And then one day we were there at the show, and the host was freaking out because none of the comics showed up except for my friend. And then the host said, hey, you're funny. You write jokes. Why don't you go and open up for your friend? And I was like, I guess. And he's like, I'll give you free drinks. And I was like, you get free drinks to do comedy? He's like, we hang out here anyways. And I was like, okay. So then every Friday night we were there on comedy night, and I was trying new material and just for free drink. When you're in college and you just get free alcohol, you're like, okay, yeah. Don't have to worry about anal.
There you go.
And then you just tell jokes. And yeah, that was pretty much it after that. And then ironically, years went by. Well, I would say a year went by, and I started realizing, like, you know, the party phase kind of went away, and I started realizing how much I loved doing it. And so I just started doing it, which I don't even know if this would be a question you were going to ask, but which led to 5 years down the road, I got my first paying gig.
Okay.
And it was weird because I got $50, and I was like looking at the guy that put me up. It was at a college show. And I was looking at the guy that gave me the money, and I was like, what's this for? And he goes, oh, because, you know, you closed out the show. And I said, what is that? I knew what closing out the show meant, but I was like, wait, why? Like, why are you giving me money? And he's all, dude, you get paid to headline the show. And I'm like, you get paid to do comedy? I was so naive that the first 5 years of comedy, I had no idea you got paid. I literally was so clueless. And I remember the guy that used to book me all the time for his shows. I went to him. I told him, I was like, wow, this guy pays you $50 to tell jokes. And he's like, well, yeah, but how do you think I make my living, stupid? But I'm like thinking, you've never paid me. You've been booking me for 5 years. I'm like, this guy's a prick.
But you got drinks.
So yeah, I got drinks. Yeah. But it's weird though. It's funny because that kind of goes with the fact that, like, when you love something, I don't want to say you're willing to always do it for free, but there is a part of you. Like, I was naive. I was doing something because I legitimately loved doing it. And in the end was, you know, in the end it snowballed. So, you know, gig after gig, you would start to learn how to make money doing it. And, yeah, you just follow that little nugget, I guess.
You're very confused this whole time, is what I'm noticing.
The internet, what is this thing that we're on? This is unusual. It's like my TV's talking to me.
Such a weirdo. So, okay, I have some of my, like, first memories of comedy involve you. Because my first venue that I ever got to book was The Getaway next to UCR.
Right.
And then I found out that that was one of your first places that you booked rooms for, too, or had a room there, too, yep. Right?
Yep. That was the very first room I ran, yeah.
Yep. Okay, so we had the same room that we ran first, but there was just a lot of time between the two. I started older, so
no,
I didn't start in college.
Born. Yeah. I was going to say, I don't even know how old you would have been at that time.
Let me see, 20 years ago? How old am I now? I would have been 16. So I'm not that much younger. Okay. I just started much later than you did.
Probably. Yeah. So. But, yeah. You probably would have hung out in that area.
Probably. Actually, I think I did hang out in there around that area around that time. So I, yeah.
Right.
But it made me think of, like, the very first time I put you on that show, and you came walking up with a notebook, and you're like, the first time when I was here, I couldn't do dick jokes. And you proceeded to do an entire time, all your time on dick jokes that night.
Yeah. Cause, I knew I had it under my belt where I was now allowed to talk about the penis.
There you go. I think I'm
getting
the explicit button.
No strings attached. I think you get to a point. You get to a point where you don't how could I put it? Well, you know, you're just not going to get fired, or it doesn't matter, or you're not getting paid. And you, not that you don't care, because I do care, because even though I went in with a list of dick jokes, don't forget, I asked if it was okay.
You like did I ask did, if it was okay.
It was Aaron. I think, huh?
No, it was, you asked me and Aaron, because Aaron and me were running the show together at the time.
Yeah, and I was just like, is it okay if I cuss? Is it okay if I do this? So, like, I mean, obviously I would have, if it was a clean show, then I would have done clean stuff. But yeah, I just thought it was amusing, because I'm like, here I am standing in a spot I haven't stood in for, at that point, maybe 19 years, maybe 18 years. And I'm sitting there going like, a lot has changed. It's kind of, it's like visiting your old elementary school or something like that.
Yeah.
And then you just go like, yeah, like back then this, you know, dick jokes was all I had. I mean,
yeah.
And then like, flash forward to now, and it's just like, no, I didn't really have any, but now I'm purposely going to do 25 minutes of penis material.
There you go. There's a lot of people that wish they could do 25 minutes of penis material, so it's fine.
I think I did work in a vagina joke, though.
I was laughing. I can't recall the jokes from that set, because there's other jokes that you have that I can like go back and be like, I remember those jokes. That night, I just remember, like, you're like, I'm going to talk about a lot of dick jokes right now. And I'm like, all right, that's how the night's going. But you actually do
I do
back.
Remember. I started, huh?
Oh, what were you going to say?
No, I was going to say, I do remember a couple of things. Ironically, one of the big stories that was out that week was the fighter pilots drew a penis in the sky. I think it was over New York or Penn. It was on the East Coast. And they did it with such precision that I was like, dude, like, how amazing are the fighter pilots that they, with such precision, were able to draw a dick and balls. And then I started thinking, why don't we just do that over countries we don't like? Like, just draw, it's like when somebody falls asleep at a party and people just draw a big dick on their forehead. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was like a whole long bit that I was doing that night about it, but yeah. So.
There you go.
All right. So.
Well, I was just about to say, you also do clean sets, because I've booked you for clean shows also. How is that going back and forth? Or did you start clean, or when did that happen?
Actually, that has a very bizarre story to it too. I used to do, this is a fun fact. When I first started doing comedy, I wanted to do strictly adult humor. And what I mean by that was exclusively like porn humor. Like, I wanted to be booked as a guy that just only talked about sex, and pretty much that was it. Like, I had this fantasy that I was gonna do get to do like the adult video award show and stuff like that. Like, I had this fantasy that that's what I wanted to write for. And so I used to do this bit where I would talk about going down on a girl, and I would do I used to call the bit celebrity vagina, because I would just talk about, like, you know, there was three types of vagina, like women take care of your vagina. It's like milk. It goes bad, you know? and I would say there's like three stages of vagina. I was like, there's the Bill Cosby vagina, where you go down in a girl and you come back up and you're just like, you know, I had the show with the children, but that person like Joe, you know? And then I had, Al Pacino vagina, where you go down and it tastes a little bit funny, but you come back like, that's okay, say hello to my little friend. And then I had the Robert De Niro vagina, where you go down and a girl, you get about the knees and you come back up with that face like, she's like, you didn't go down. We say, yes I did, a little bit. And so I used to close with that, as hacky and goofy as that may seem now, but one day I got asked to perform at there was this Christian comic, and he saw me and he liked me, and he said, hey, I do this church gig, but we have it like after services at this coffee shop next door to the church, right? And he goes, I would love to have you perform. And I'm looking at him like, you just watch me do like all porn humor for like 20 minutes right now. And then he's just like, yeah, but He goes, no, I think you'd be great. You'd be great. And so I'm like, so the first time I showed up to this gig and I was clueless. I was freaking out. And I cracked a joke on the drive. There was another comic with me at the time. And I cracked a joke. I said, this is a church gig. I go, I'm probably going to burst into flames the second I walk into the building. And we pulled up and I kid you not, the coffee shop had burned down. We pulled up and there was fire trucks. I'm not even joking. There was fire trucks and the comic that was running the gig was standing outside and he's like, hey dog, blah, blah, blah. Like there was a fire. And I'm like sitting there like, what? Like God just got mad at me. And then so he asked me like again, they were gonna do another church gig. And I told him, I go, hey, and it was really bizarre. Like I think it like really legit scared me. Like I was like, is that a sign from God? Like what just happened? And so he tells me, oh, I got this other gig. I'll book you on this if you wanna do it's another church gig. And I was just like, hey, I'll be honest, man, like I don't really do clean. And then he goes, oh man, he goes, I love your celebrity vagina bit. And I was like, how am I supposed to do that at a church gig, right? And he goes, nah, man, and this is where it hit me, and I'll always kind of be grateful for that. He goes, you're smart enough, you'll think of something. And okay. He goes, but I want to see that bit. So then I was thinking about it and I was just like, I don't think any, you know, it was kind of rare that somebody said something like that to me, especially at that time. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay. So then I remember I got home. I was, you know, home thinking about this gig. I think the gig was not going to be for another like 2 weeks or something. And I was sitting there thinking about it and I eat a lot of cereal. So like I'm always, every night I've bowls of cereal. And one night I was sitting there and thinking about my set because I'm like, I have a church gig coming up. And at the time I'm like, I don't have a single clean joke. Now I walk over to the fridge and pouring my cereal, grab my milk. And the first thing I did was I smelled the milk and it clicked in my head. I was like, oh, what if I just change vagina to milk? Like, oh, because I used to open up with that bit was like, oh, your vagina is like milk, you know, it can go bad. And it like it occurred to me like, holy crap, that's a good, you know, transition. So then I remember that being one joke. When I did the church gig, I said, yeah, I swear, like the other day I had a bowl of cereal and it's like the milk freaked me out because it was like on the expiration date. And it kind of goes through three stages. And then I said the Bill Cosby milk and I'm like, this milk smells good, blah, blah. And then I just started going down the list and then like the Al Pacino milk, the Robert De Niro milk. And, but because of that joke, it sparked me to always write two parallels.
Okay.
So like if I write a joke that's like really dirty, like I try to think of a really clean joke version of it and vice versa. So literally I can do my set just right down the middle or either side and just have it be completely just filthy and dirty or squeaky clean without even the remote thought that there's anything sinister or perverted or anything like that.
So vagina or cereal?
That's an example. Yeah.
All right.
But yeah,
I don't know if I can compare my vagina to Fruity Pebbles like at any point. Like,
it depends.
Maybe.
It depends. You never know.
No, I'm gonna have to start thinking.
Maybe not Fruity Pebbles, but Fruity Rings. It depends on the. Depends on the amount of product you might use.
There we go.
Frosted Flakes.
I feel like that's a bad one. I feel like that's not where you want it to go.
I used to do, again, this is back then when I was doing the really disgusting humor. I used to do a bit about corn pops and this is stupid. It's not even that funny now, but you just reminded me because of the cereal.
Yeah.
I used to say, oh, like, look, it's crunchy herpes like that, right? And I used to just pretend, yeah. But it's so stupid. Like in hindsight, it's amazing too. That's another big thing that comics don't realize. Is you think you're funny now in 20 years you are fucking retarded. Like, like you don't realize how stupid you sound.
Yeah.
And I don't give a damn how clean you are and how brilliant you might be. Because there's guys that are just brilliant writers. And but 20 years down the road, they will always look back and feel like, that's nothing. That's like, my new bit is way better than that bit. And I see it all the time. And there's comics that I see and I'm like, dude, that bit was amazing. And they're like, nah, that was 10 years ago. But, you know, it makes them... I think you're a better writer for it. I think if you're always looking back and you're always indecisive on where you stand, then you're in the right spot. You know what I mean? You should always be maintaining your balance, so to speak. If you don't feel that wobble, then something's wrong. You know what I mean?
You're
too grounded or too into yourself. That's a huge one too. I see comics do that all the time.
So looking back, how many people like do you think like that you started with that you're still close with in comedy?
So bizarre you say that. None. None. I well, especially when it comes to being close to, gosh, I would safely say maybe one or two people. I mean, there's people that I knew halfway through, like 10 years ago. And I still talk to, and we're fairly close. there's people that I run into that when I started, and you know, I still see them, and I'm cool with them. I don't have any problems. There's people that I don't get along with now, for like the whole other topic, but like joke stealing and just attitudes and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but generally, I remember, I think I was about like 7 years into comedy, and there was, cause I'm kind of a loner. A lot of people that I'm sure you notice, like I always show up to gigs by myself and I'm kind of just come and go. I don't really hang. Like I come and I try to get to the show early and then I wait till the show's done. Meaning even if somebody goes up after me or there's like four more guys after me, I usually wait till the whole show is done. And then I leave. Like, I don't really, I think it's rude for entertainers to just leave like after their set. It just shows like you're selfish and you could care less about everybody else. And that's a huge thing to me too. I've seen that over the years because a lot of the comedians that I, they kind of took me under their wing. They were older guys and a lot of them have passed away since then. And, they were, like comedians that opened up and were writers for Richard Pryor, you know, George Carlin. Like these guys would, well, they did not write for George Carlin, but would like, you know, do shows with him, hook him up with friends with him, stuff like that. And, but then like, one buddy was a writer for Richard Pryor and was on Richard Pryor's old sketch comedy show and stuff. But these guys would teach me stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, like as green as I was, they would always just like, the main thing was like respect, respect, respect. And I learned that so young that I knew right away, like, don't ever disrespect like the other acts. There's comics I don't get, like I want to fist fight. And I've brought them up on stage. If I was emceeing or if we were passing the mic from one comic to the next, or if just, you know, and it's weird because that's a mutual respect too, because I've had comics that are older than me that I don't get along with. And I've brought them on stage and I've said, you know, oh, this next guy is hilarious. You guys are going to love him. And in my mind, I'm thinking, I'm going to fucking kick him in the throat.
Oh my gosh.
Like, you know what I mean? But in my head, that stays in my head.
Yeah.
And then ironically, that comic goes up and he's like, oh, give a round of applause for Ace. That dude's a funny guy, right? Blah, blah, blah. And you know, they're thinking the same thing. Like, they're like, I want to kill this guy. But that's professionalism. And a lot of people don't have that. And you also have to understand that, like, going back to the point of like being, you know, appropriate and not just bailing on people and so on and so forth. But back to your point, because I went off on a big tangent.
You're good.
Yeah, I would get comics saying things like, you know, how come you don't hang around with other comics? And I would tell them, I go, it's almost like if you've ever watched any of those like war movies where they show like a Vietnam soldier that's in his platoon and he keeps to himself, and they're like, hey, how come you don't make friends? He's like, because I've served three tours and I've already watched all my friends die. And then like, that's kind of comedy. Like people drop off. They just disappear. They do comedy for like a year or two. And they get stuck in that loop of just doing open mics only. They don't try to grow. They don't try to venture out. And so it gets kind of loopy. Sorry, I'm again.
No, just, you're good. I was like, because there's people that I started with and that they're already gone. So I can only imagine having that much more time and how many people just kind of drop off the map.
But, yeah.
So some of the things that I always think is interesting. So you got to do comedy on a cruise ship.
Mm-hmm.
How was that?
The money's good.
Okay. We can stop there.
You know what though? There's bad gigs, but they're it's weird. I should make a little mantra out of this. There are no bad gigs. Because there was some horrible, horrible shows that I did on ships, and great material came from it.
Okay.
Like literally, I found myself writing jokes that were just like I couldn't even, you know, I wouldn't have even thought of if I'd have done them, you know, at a comedy club or if I was killing all the time. And that's another huge thing is with cruise ships, it's it's really hard because a lot of the passengers are old people. I mean, I've done a couple cruise ships. I did a ship. I'll give you an example. I did a ship one time and the crowd was like ancient. And so I tried to do like bits about Bob Dylan, Elvis, Rolling Stones. And then the next day I was at the gym the gym in the ship. And as I'm working out, this old man comes up to me and he goes, yeah, I liked your stand-up, but you lost me with all the musical comedy. I said, oh, I'm sorry. You know, and I'm thinking, okay, well, you know, it's not for everybody. And he goes, yeah, you were talking about Bob Dylan and Elvis. He goes, that shit my kids used to listen to. And I'm like, I can't even do that math. Like, I don't even, what were you listening to? Like, was it like, you know, Sinatra or before that? I don't even understand. Like, were you listening to like Beethoven live in concert? Like, I don't understand what happened. Like, how old are you?
So how did music kind of come into your act? Or was it always part of
that? That was another accident.
So many accidents for you.
It was an accident. I was doing, because I was playing in bands at the same time that I was doing comedy shows. And so people that saw me from music would come and watch my comedy. Because, you cross promote. Like, hey, come check out my band. I mean, come check out my comedy show, whatever. And while I'm doing a musical show. And so one day I had people, a group of friends come out and they were just like, hey, how come you didn't do any musical comedy? I'm like, because musical comedy sucks. And like, I was like, I hate musical comedy, man. And I really do. Like, I think that like, I think comics that do guitar are boring. And so I tried to reformulate it. And if anybody's ever seen my comedy compared to other comics that do musical stuff, you know, like mine is way different.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't do like these like kind of just acoustic drawn out first, second, third verse songs. Like I do kind of like, it's by design to be a one-liner. Mm-hmm. So it's literally the verse is a setup and the chorus is the punchline. And then I stop because there's no reason to drag a joke. There's no reason. Once you've said it, you've said it. And that's the laughter. Why, you know, why try to milk that? And I get people.
I lost you.
Shit, and it's like, but when I ended up doing putting music in there, it became people, because originally I was doing like a 45 to 60 minute show, but the music was only six, like 5 or 6 minutes of my set, and I was actually in the beginning making fun of other comics that do guitar stuff, which was the irony. I was making fun. I like how my phone is listening to our conversation and just started recording what I was saying. I was making fun of the comedians that do guitar and how boring it is and how stupid it is. And then it was killing. And this was only like 5 minutes of my set. I was doing all stand up and then 5 minutes of guitar. And every gig I was asked to do, I would show up and they were putting up pictures of me holding the guitar. And I'm like, you know what I mean? I'm like, mm-hmm. So then I started working on stuff. And it was getting me booked for a ton of things. Yeah. And so I just went with it. And then eventually it became mostly music and very little stand-up. But now I think I found a good balance where I do like almost one-liners mixed with music. And then I do impressions and go back and forth all over the map and stuff with it. But
Well, I think that's probably a perfect segue into your first joke that you sent me, which is your Metallica joke.
Yeah.
One of the first concerts I ever went to as a kid was a Metallica concert. It's the first time I ever saw like a metal band, and I was like, that's so cool. It was the first time I ever saw groupies, which was even cooler. I go to Metallica concert, I'm a little boy, man, and I see these hot chicks, and they're flashing the band, they're like, woo! And I'm like, wow, cool. Then I was at a Metallica concert recently, and it was those same girls. They're flashing the band like, woo! I was wondering if the band goes for it, like they're backstage with those chicks. No one's around, they're like... She's got no teeth, crooked feet, and she smells like meth. The tits drag on the ground. Crooked eyes from the thighs, and she's got bad breath. But hey, there's no one around. I take a van to my room. My friends get a bus, be insane. I try to forget her the next morning, but the memory remains.
Where did that one come from? Are you somebody?
Seeing groupies for the first time?
Okay, wait. Is there? I feel like there's an accident in here somewhere.
No, well, that's what I'm saying, is the seeing girls at a young age, and it's like you want to be, when you're young and you want to be a rock star,
mm-hmm.
Every musician does this, where we sit there and we say, like, it's about the music, man. Like, I love making music, man. And then, like, it really, you're trying to get laid. Idealistically, okay. You're trying to do something that gets you attention. Now, you may be passionate about it. You may love what you do, and I do. But at the same time, you are doing something. When you start getting in front of a stage, in front of a crowd to show off, so to speak, you're, you know, like, I used to do a bit about that too, where it's like, anything a man does, it's really just deep down inside, it's to mate. Like, do you think the guy that invented the wheel really gave a shit about, like, moving objects more smoothly? Maybe it helped, but he did notice, like, the other cave women were standing around going, look at that big round thing he just made. When you're young and you pick up a guitar and the first thing you see is guys on TV and even girls on TV just like, yeah, look at me. And then you look around the room and everybody's looking at them like, woo, and, you know, flashing them, and you start to go, oh, attention. So there is a part of you that does, you know, that does that, you know, the avenue that takes. And so, yeah, that bits like that kind of come into play where it's like you work in, mm-hmm. you know, the fact that like, okay, so I like Metallica. Metallica's cool. And let me just share some experiences. I went out and just saw some girls chichis at a show. And then you kind of work it into a song. So you kind of kill two birds with one stone, I guess they say.
There you go. The next joke you sent is about you being bit by a Mexican.
I wasn't always Mexican. I just got bit by one as a kid. And stay that way. I'll throw in a couple of familiar tunes for you guys just to give you guys something special, man. See, right now everybody's talking about Latinos. That's like the big thing. Just like everybody's just like mad about it, you know. I have a friend who came out from Chicago and he stayed out here in California for like 2 months, right? And he checked into like 5 different hotels and he kept telling me, nobody speaks English, man. Every hotel. I said, it's California, bro. Because you know how like the rest of the country, like they have like deer crossing. Like, you know, armadillo crossing. Out here, we have an actual family crossing.
So where did that one come?
That was one of those gigs where, yeah, I was doing a show and everybody, because I used to do this bit about being raised by a pack of wild Mexicans. And, the only reason I did it was just because I was doing a show at the Laugh Factory and the owner had told me, he goes, you need to talk about being Latino, because I didn't have any bits about being Latino. Mm-hmm. And so like I started writing these Latino bits, and then I was doing a show where it was all Latino, and man, it was like everyone in that room was just like Mexican. Like, oh. I was the lightest complexion in that room and the tallest guy in that room. And I said, you know, that I go, yeah, I'm Latino. And you heard somebody in the audience go, nah, like that, right? And I go, and it just popped. It just came to me. I'm like, well, I wasn't always Mexican. I just got bit by one as a kid and it killed. So I'm like, keeper. And like, that's the point. It's like people, that's what I said, there are no bad shows. Like, you can still come up with something mm-hmm. in the moment.
That's awesome. Which, I mean, okay, so the next joke is also, oh, it's about your dad not letting you watch stuff unless there was like Mexican actors in it.
Dad's like a real proud Latino guy too. He's one of those guys, like Native American though, that's what cracks me up. And he's like, he looks at the Indian for the Bugs Bunny cartoon that had a secret. It's like, I know something, I won't tell. That's my dad. You know, they watch movies with Mexican actors. I'm like, hey, Dad, how can we let us watch Star Wars? He's like, Chewbacca's Mexican. Like, why would you say that? He's like, look at him, he's brown, he's hairy, he doesn't speak English, he's a good mechanic. And then he calls like Chewy. He always rolls his R's like, brrrr. It's just like Pancho Villa.
Yeah, Star Wars?
Mexicans, yeah.
So, I mean, where did that one come from?
What happened?
I said, where did that joke come from? Sorry, I know, my connection's poopy.
Where did that joke come from?
Yeah.
Oh, well, just that. When I was growing up, my dad would only... It was kind of funny. He predominantly would watch movies with Mexican actors, like no matter how terrible they were. Like if it was, as long as it had a Latino in it, he was like, this movie's got Latinos in it. And I used to joke about this too, but it wasn't in that bit. If my dad liked an actor, he considered him Latino. Like, he was trying to find a way to make him Mexican or something. Mm-hmm. Like, he was just like, he like Tom Cruise. He'd be like, no, it's Cruz. Listen, it's Tom Cruise. He's really Mexican. He's just like trying to pretend he's white. And so it was just like, oh, okay. So Mission Impossible. But yeah, so. So yeah, it was like bits like that, and that whole bit too about my dad came from the same thing. When Jimmy Masada at the Laugh Factory was telling me, like, oh, you know, you don't talk about being Latino, and I was just like, ugh. So I just went home and wrote down all of the memories I had growing up, and that was one of them. So.
Got it. How does your family feel about you doing comedy?
Now they're fine with it. Originally, they were not fine with it. Originally, they wanted me to get a real job. They would always tell me they were very unsupportive in the beginning, but it took years for them to finally come. I will actually never forget the day they came around.
Okay.
I got a gig in Vegas. It was my first Vegas gig, and it was at the Riviera.
Okay.
And I remember I told them, I go, yeah, I got a gig in Vegas at the Riviera. I'll be there for a week. And they showed up that weekend. And I had no idea that, A, I didn't know they were coming. And B, my name was on the marquee and I didn't know. I had no idea all week it was on the marquee. And so they pulled up and they were taking pictures and all kinds of stuff. And then they start telling their show, they're like, oh my God, that's amazing. And I'm like, what? And they show me like the pictures, and in my head I'm thinking, I didn't even know that was out there. And then they saw that like people were paying like, you know, $25 to $40 a ticket to get into the theater stuff. And yeah, it was kind of weird. It was in that moment that they were starting to go, and I think I even remember my mom and dad both saying like, wow, you are actually doing something with this. And I remember it was like maybe a few years later, my dad had kind of just out of the blue, like we were driving from another gig. I took him with me for the weekend, and on the drive home, he brought it up and he said, I know we were never supportive of you doing this, you know, but your mom and I are proud of you. We just want you to know that. And I'm like thinking, oh, that took a lot to say. So I didn't know how to... I didn't know how to respond. I was like, okay, cool. Like, right. Dang. I think I'm supposed to be an emotional moment now. I think I'm supposed to cry. I don't know. Yeah. You love me. You really love me.
And there it is. You would be the one to take an emotional moment to right there.
Yeah,
right. The last joke you sent me is about girls that hate a name so much that it just instantly pisses them off.
Went to a restaurant, man. I found out a weird thing about women too. We went to this restaurant and everything was fine, everything was great, and all of a sudden she noticed the waitress's name tag. And I didn't know this. Guys, if you don't know this about women, I'm gonna tell you a little secret. Every single woman on earth has a name of another woman that they hate. They could be somewhere having a great time. All of a sudden, they hear that name, and they're like, that bitch. Is she here? She's gonna die. Men don't have that problem. If we meet a guy named Joe, we don't think of the Joe we hate. We're like, hey, Joe, how's it going? How's it going? A woman could see a little girl. She's like, oh my God, she's so adorable. What's her name, Rebecca? She's a slut. Don't play with her. She could be cooties. Don't talk to her.
Oh, yeah.
Is there a story behind that one? Because I feel like there's a story. That's smart. Yeah,
okay, so I will give you a... just a little side fact about all of my stand-up. Every single joke I've ever written is literally based on something that happened to me. I don't think I've ever made up a story or anything. But yeah. Apparently, And I gave you, like, I think the most innocent, cleanest part of that set. There was, yeah, went off on a tangent, but there's a there's a lot more to that joke. But basically, in a nutshell, it was just that I think that was the intro to that bit. But fact that women just have an issue with, you know, other women's names. And I remember finding that out the hard way. And a girl noticed somebody's name, and I was in fucking trouble. And you know what was weird is, it's like, you know how, like, you girls do this. I've heard other comics joke about this, and it's absolutely true. Girls do this shit. But when you're asleep and you have a dream that he's cheating on you, and then you wake up pissed at him, and literally he did nothing. And, you know, I don't even want to say girl. I'm sure gay guys and gay girls have this problem all the time too. But it's like, whoever the feminine one is in the relationship, I'm sure they're the one that predominantly has that dream. Because, yeah, I've been in trouble for shit like that too. And I'm like, what are you, like, I didn't do nothing. And, yeah, you're sitting there like, what happened? But, because girls, I don't know what it is. I think you're too emotional. You have a side of you that, gosh, even if a girl, like, looks like another girl, they, like, I mean, I can understand that, but the name is what weirds me out. Is just like, dang, isn't it the same name? But it's kind of like
I'm trying to remember if I remember my dreams enough to ever get mad during them.
I know I've had those dreams too, but I didn't really wake up mad about it. I think my dreams are mostly scary or sad.
Mine, like, all the dreams I remember are scary.
Yeah. I don't know. It's weird. People tell me, like, I had this dream that I was, you know, I was on a bus and I went to a grocery store and, like, you know, I don't know, Wayne Newton started talking to me. Just some random, you know, thing. And I'm like, who has those fucking dreams? Like, I have dreams where, like, a fucking demon is, like, trying to break into my house, but then it turns out we're friends, and then, like, we go off and like, we start building model airplanes and shit, and, like, he's on fire, and, like I hear a knock on the door, and I walk away, and there's a zombie in the peephole, and it's just sitting there into the door, and I'm like, oh, okay, I'm gonna go make a sandwich. And, like, those are my dreams. Like, I don't know. I have no idea. I would kill for these stupid dreams where people are just like, I had a dream that I had a dream. I woke up and I was walking around having a day, and then I realized I was still asleep, and I'm like, what the hell is that? That's weird to me.
My dreams are weird usually, so I don't know.
What do you dream of?
I have a lot of zombie dreams. I have a lot of sci-fi dreams. My dreams go very sci-fi. So there's, yeah.
Are you in cosplay when you do it? Like, when you have those dreams?
I do cosplay. I don't think I've ever cosplayed in a dream. I'm usually, like, in a hoodie in my dreams, but the world is fucked up. But I'm in a hoodie. But no, I'm just trying to think about it, because I'm like, I don't really have, like, dreams that apply to my life.
Somebody told me once, I remember having a dream about a zombie, and and at the time I was working at this, this was forever years ago. I was working for this company that was it was the crane machines with the stuffed animals.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I used to refill those things, and I got fired because everybody kept winning. But I remember I was kind of like bored and stressed out, and I just kept having this reoccurring nightmare about zombies, and the zombies kept trying to get in my house, and I was just like, I was scared but more annoyed by them. And I remember I had a temporary agent at the time, and her and I were talking, and I told her about my dream. She goes, oh, that's because you're stressed about work. And I go, what do you mean? She's all, the zombie represents that it's the same, like, repetitive thing from day to day. And I'm like, how the fuck do you know that? Like, what? Like, where? Like, how did you figure that shit out in like 2 seconds? Like, the second, I don't know what it is with people. Like, they just know, like, oh, you dreamt about, you know, Frankenstein? That's because your blind date is a beast, you know? Like, and that's what you know she looks like or something. I don't know. Like how do you know?
I don't know. I have a dream book.
It made sense. That's the scary part.
I have a dream book, but I don't think I've ever opened it. Somebody gave it to me. So now I'm going to have to go look this up. But I think the last dream I actually, like, remember, I was swimming with an octopus. So I don't know.
Poor unfortunate soul.
I don't know what an octopus means. You just started a new project called Cover Stories. How did that start?
It started out of boredom. I had that idea years ago, and it's really it was really just a carbon copy of an old show called Red Eye that used to be on Fox like years ago, and it went away. They canceled the show, and it used to be so funny, and I was like, dude, the show's great. Like, and so I figured, like, you know, I'm constantly trying to write material based on topical events and stuff, and so I was like, I could just try to do my own version of that show, and little by little I'm trying to morph it into something else that's, you know, staying to get further away. So basically I use that as like a template to get started, and then so I'm noticing, like, the last episode we just filmed last night is already looking completely different, and the cadence is a lot, you know, spiraling off into its own thing. So but yeah, and then I was explaining this to somebody the other day. Every news story we're seeing on TV is just fucking bad. Like, everybody's just, you know, doing either crazy political, or even when they're trying to be funny, it's just over the top political, and it's just like, oh God. Like, the second you see it, it's annoying. And so I figured, let's just do stuff that's off topic. And I get that, you know, some kind of political jokes are going to pop up. One of our guests last night was going off on a Trump impression. But the comedy's comedy. If it's good, it's good, you know. And his was phenomenal. His was amazing. And, it was kind of just one of those things where it was like, I'm bored. I'm not doing shows. I'm not working. So why not just make a show that I want to see, and which is pretty much the premise of everything I do, is what do you want to see? What do you want to hear? Then do it yourself, because no one else is doing it. So.
Awesome. I know. It was so much fun to do, because I got to do one with you, and I was so thankful that you thought of me.
Oh.
So, where have been, like, your favorite places to perform, or, like, where have you performed? Because I know it's cruise ships. I know here in Vegas, but, like, where else?
You know what? I liked doing Vegas a lot. There was stuff about it. It did get a little weird, though, when it was, because you would get week-long gigs. Mm-hmm. And Vegas is kind of a weird town, because, like, if you're not from, you kind of just go, well, you know, after 2 days you're done, you want to go home, and it would get that way. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, in hindsight, I would say it was probably one of the better environments, because I knew I was a drive away from home, where I could just be home like 4 hours, or it was a happening spot. There was always something to do, somewhere to go. And if not, you could just chill out in your room and just let the time go by, whatever. But I would say that's one of the better places. I know I probably have some favorites. I just can't think of them right now, but that sticks out in my head a lot.
Of course.
The worst, I could tell you the worst places.
Okay, where's the worst?
One of them isn't even there anymore. It was this club in Arizona. It was just a nightmare, but the gig was okay. It was the owner that made it a nightmare, and I remember I showed up to the gig an hour early. We're in Arizona, and it's like 115 degrees at the time.
Oh no.
And so I had a button-up shirt that my girlfriend was holding in the hallway, and I was wearing a tank top that was going to be underneath. And I walk in to hit the owner's office, and it's an hour before show.
Yeah.
And I was going to ask him, like, hey, is there anything you want me to plug or promote for today? Because I was emceeing that show.
Yeah.
And he turns around, he looks me up and down, and he's like, what the fuck? And he just starts yelling at me. I'm like, whoa, what? You know, and he's like, go put on a fucking shirt. I don't want some asshole on my stage looking like he just worked on a car. And I was like, what the hell? And then at the end of the week, it was really weird, because after that week was over, he bought merchandise off me. And I was like, okay. And he told me, he complimented how funny he thought I was. But I was like, you're going down as a permanent dickhead in my memoir, dude.
But
there's been quite a few uncomfortable. There's been quite a few shithole gigs. But there's way too many to mention.
Oh, yeah.
That's the problem with comedy. You know that. Like, I would safely say at least 50% of the time you're performing in a place where you either need a tetanus shot or, don't touch anything, basically, in a nutshell.
I actually just performed right off of Skid Row, and it was really weird because I usually wear skirts and stuff. And I was like, no, not to this one. This one I wear pants.
You may as well wear a hazmat suit.
I was just like, I'm head my mask, everything. I was like, nope, everything is covered. It felt very rapey, but it was fine. But what's the advice you wish you got when you first started?
Don't do it. No, okay.
That's commonly the most common advice that everybody wishes they heard.
Yeah, I'm not surprised, to be honest. It's... If anybody is thinking about doing comedy, just know that it is not an overnight success.
Yeah.
And most of the comedians that got lucky that way, there is a there's some things to keep in mind. Like, I would say half the comics that you saw that are an overnight success, mm-hmm. quote unquote an overnight success, they've actually been doing it for like years, 10 yeah. 12 15 20 years,
mm-hmm.
and one day they blow up and then everyone says they're an overnight success. It's like, no, asshole, just because you barely discovered them doesn't mean they were an overnight success. The other thing is a lot of luck. Half of those overnight successes are luck. And comedy, like music, I mean, it's an acquired taste. You have to know that you like it or love it. And that's what, you'll get lucky. Like, I remember Angela Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
We were all doing shows at like these tiny venues. And so I remember her and I both filmed at the same time. It was a show called Comedy Time. And it was, exclusively on YouTube and stuff. And my video did well. I want to say it had like maybe 250, 500,000 views, something like that,
mm-hmm.
between there. And but hers at the same exact time, I mean, just like overnight was like 3 million or something, some crazy number.
Yeah.
And I remember she just... I had talked to her maybe a year later, because we had only done a few gigs. Her friends were my friends, and we had only done a few gigs with each other. And here it was like a year later, and I was talking to her. We were doing a NACA convention, college convention, and I asked her, I'm like, hey, so like, how did all that happen? And she goes, one day I came home and she goes, my answering machine was just full. And I was like, oh no, something happened. And she goes, I was checking it. And she goes, and it was agent after agent after agent and managers and all these different companies. And they were just like, oh, we want to sign you. We want to do this and we want to do that. And she's like, what is this? And she goes, next thing I knew, one of the messages was like, hey, congratulations, your video went viral and blah, blah, blah. And she was pretty new. I think, gosh, she had only been doing it at the time, maybe a year. Maybe, mm-hmm. I don't even remember exactly how long she had been doing comedy. But yeah, it was funny because she did that. And just like that, I mean, from a YouTube video, all of a sudden she was like on Mad TV and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it just spiraled. But she's one of like those rarities that I said. Like, there's a couple comics that I know like that personally, that they're there for a few months or something, and something just crazy happens. Now, luckily, they're cool people. But you get these other people that are just pieces of shit. And like, you know, so you feel like you're kind of like, okay, well, cool. You know, like, good for them. I knew a girl, Charlene Yee, same thing. She was just doing open mic. She wouldn't even, people were shitting on her. Like, even the people that were, she took their comedy class and they were treating her like trash. And then like, next thing you knew, she was doing, I asked her about it too, because I saw her doing movies. And then I said, hey, how did that happen? And she was just telling me the same thing. I was doing this really kind of, you know, crappy gig at an old theater at some school. Like, there happened to be a producer there that said, hey, I want to put you in a movie. And next thing you know, she was in a major movie. And gosh, because she did movies and she was part of was a House, that series. Okay. And then, but yeah, it just goes on and on. Like, there's quite a few people that I know that have done that. Now, there's also comics that just are, and they assume that that's all it takes.
Yeah.
It's 3 months. I've heard comics say, oh, I give it 6 months. And then, you know, but I'm like, you give it 6 months. I'm like, you need to give it your all.
Yeah.
Like, that's the point. Like, you have to love it. Like, who knows if people like, you know, like, say, Angela, if it wouldn't have worked out, like, would she still have been doing comedy? Would it have gone away? Like, would she be somewhere else doing something else? Who knows? I can't say. I don't know what her passion for it is. I don't know what anybody's passion for it is. But, you know, I know some people are passionate about it, because there's comics I know that have been doing this 25, 30 years, and they're still at square one. Like, there's mm-hmm. no growth. And you almost look at them and you kind of go like, why are you doing this? But you know, like, it's for the love. They're passionate about it. And some people get fortunate and other people don't. I mean, I was fortunate to make money off of it, but I mean, that all came to screeching halt this year because of all this stuff. And I don't see it in the foreseeable future. So I don't know what, you know, I may have to go work for Amazon or something. I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
But am I going to stop trying to be creative? No. Like, that's just, it's in my blood. I love doing what I do. Hell, if I'm on my lunch breaks at my next job, you know, putting on a concert or a comedy show, then so be it. But that's what it takes, is you have to love what you do, even when you hate it. Like, it's like it's a marriage. It's a relationship. You know, you have bad times and you'll see other people become successful. And it does, you know, trust me, it does make you feel like, damn, like, when is my shot coming? When is my turn going to come? It may never come. And it may, there's a lot of times that I sit there and I think about it like, well, you know, if it hasn't happened now, it's not going to happen. And that may be true. But you never know. I mean, it was a Dangerfield didn't blow up till he was in his 40s.
There you go.
I think he was maybe 50 when he finally got a big break. But the point is, you never know. It's just, you could be doing it, you know, right out of the gate your first day, and you get a big successful check. Or you could be doing it your entire life and no one cares. And but I think the moral of that is that you have to ask yourself, why are you doing it? Because there's people that I see, there's comics that I see that are doing it for the wrong reason too. They're doing it to get laid, to do drugs, to just hang out, to party. I've seen a couple guys personally that their whole career is based on I don't care. I'm just going to get high and get laid. And then whatever I say on stage is going to be funny. And it kind of makes me sad because 90% of the time they're not.
Yeah.
They're not funny. And it's just, you know, but for some reason they're great talkers. They're great con men and they can get an owner or a booker to book them and pay them. And then, you know, but you know, that's their life. And in the end, you know, they're just going to be washed up or OD'd, you know, former comic or whatever. And, you know, you'll be still doing what you do. And you got to also try to go with the flow and manipulate what you're doing. Like,
okay.
The stuff that I was doing 20 years ago is not the stuff I'm doing now. And the stuff that, like, the show that I'm doing, that is morphing because I can't do the other stuff.
Yeah.
I can't be on a stage in front of a crowd. I can't, you know, I can't make a living off that way. So I could sit there and just say, well, I give up. It's over. Life sucks. And it does. But it's what you do with it when it sucks, man. It's what, you know, if all you have is, you know, like, it's so weird. It's so random. I remember my dad telling me a story because he was, you know, poor when he was a kid. And he would see kids with toys, action figures.
Yeah.
And one of the easiest things to get a hold of when you're a kid, no matter how poor you are, is a comic book. And my dad used to tell me, I used to make my own action figures. I would take the comic books and I would cut out the characters, like Superman and Lex Luthor. And then I would have little action figures, paper action figures, and I would just play with them like toys. It really is a matter of creativity. What are you going to do with your time? What are you going to do with, you know, so you can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
Do this, you know, find something. If not, you'll go crazy. And
yeah,
trust me, I know. You will lose your shit. And there's times that I struggle with even the stuff that I'm doing where I'm like, damn it, why is no one watching? Or damn it, why is no one listening? But then it occurred to me, it may not be for now. It may be for 100 years from now.
Yeah.
Nikola Tesla once said that. Nikola Tesla once said, you know, I'm not a scientist for now. I'm a scientist for the future. Like, I'm somebody that people will know later.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about being known now. And I think that's a big thing that you have to kind of come to terms with as a person, just in general, as a human being in general, whether you're an entertainer or just a Joe Schmo working in an office or a warehouse or a truck driver, you know, you may not be for now. Like, we are all stepping stones for the future. And are you going to be a solid stepping stone or are you going to just be a wobbly one? You know,
there you go.
Like, it's do what you can while you can.
All right. And I just have one question. We don't have one more left question. We don't have too much more time, but what is your end game in comedy? Like, what would your ultimate success be in this?
To stop. No.
I love you go from so positive to so negative so fast.
It's weird. I've always imagined that I would get to a point where I would be successful enough to be comfortable. Okay. Like, I never fantasized about being rich. I know people see themselves as like rich and famous and everyone knows their name. I think I almost kind of already fulfilled the goal in the sense where I had wanted to just be able to say, I'm not hungry, you know, I'm not homeless. You know, and that's really all that it matters is, like, you know, I may not be a millionaire. I'm a hundred-aire. I don't know how you would say it. But, and that's the point. I mean, 2020 sucked and it took all that wind out of my sails. But at the same time, it's just like, my fantasy of success was always to have a community, like, of homes that I had built where my entire family can live. Like, parents, uncles, aunts, brothers, sisters, all in the same block, and we're just comfortable. And I don't worry about it. I bought all your houses, that type of thing.
Yeah.
I would love that. But other than that, I mean, I'm not fantasizing about driving around in a Maserati or anything like that. I mean, just comfort, just happiness. Like, I don't care if anyone knows me, and I don't care if anybody wants my autograph or not, but I do care about people like around me, and hell, people that aren't even around me, I care about. Like, I would love to just be at least some type of voice of reason where people can just go like, he's a comfort zone, like, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm not expecting him to do anything, but just be there, you know? And that's like a nice way to end like your golden years, so to speak. I don't know. There just be go. There.
You just want to exist.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, thank you so much for talking with me. It was so much fun. I can't wait to actually be at a show with you again.
Yeah, I thank you, and I'm sorry I kept rambling on and on.
You're
and
good.
On. I'm obviously a blabbermouth.
It's why I like seeing you, because I enjoy your stories on and off stage.
Oh. And I'll try to be funny next time. Okay. I don't feel like I was very funny. I feel like I was very educational. I don't know.
Actually, most people that listen, they listen because they enjoy the process of comedy and the stories behind it. So if it's funny or if it's not, it's all part of it.
Well, none of this comedy is process. It's all free range.
Yeah, it's wherever it is.
So there's that.
All right. Well, thank you.
But yeah, thank you. And yeah, let me know. Maybe we'll do this again. And I would love to have you back on my show as well.
Definitely.
Probably in a few weeks if you're open.
Let me know. Send me a date and I'll pass it up. All right. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thank you guys so much for listening to my conversation with Ace. I hope you enjoyed it. Make sure you follow him on Instagram, that you go to his website, and you watch his episodes of Cover Stories. It was so much fun. I got to be on it, and I had an absolute blast. Also, as always, want to make sure to say thank you to Dave the Prophet for providing the music. His beats were provided by Curtis King. As always, this has been Finding the Funny. I'm Stephanie Michelle, and I hope you enjoyed.
I told my mama on the phone, it ain't no check to check. No more Honda Civics, baby, time to whip that back. Lyrics, beats, and the hooks, I'm a triple threat. Glow up on my Jesus piece, now I'm living blessed. Looney Bin, BYE, you know we down to ride. Try to kill me with this mic, suicide. Since I got on man, all I hear is fucking lies. More money, more problems, fucking certified. Doja Cat, throw it back. David blowing back, blowing up on Super Saiyan. But I'm fucking holding back. Never stop until I put my fucking city on the map. 3 a.m. on Ocean Air, put the pedal to the max. Fresh print.
Were you listening to like Beethoven live in concert? Like, I don't understand what happened. Like,